WSCO presents Georgia. If you'd like to participate in our program today, give us a call at area code 831-479-1080. That's 479-1080. And now, KSCO presents Georgia.
Good afternoon, everybody, and hello again. Thanks for listening to KSCO 1080 here in Santa Cruz, California. My name is Georgia, and I am your host for KSCO Presents. So glad to have you aboard once again. It is Wednesday, May 15th. Happy Hump Day to all you hardworking Americans. By the way, tonight is the night to go to the Freedom Forum at 7 p.m., 1900 17th Avenue at the Live Oak Grange to learn about what has happened to our press. Now, many of us feel there is no free press, but a controlled press. So y'all come down and let's see what we can learn. The folks at Freedom Forum do this as a community service, and they're all volunteers. So let's show our support and appreciation. Now, if a couple of you can come at 6:30 to help with parking, that will be very much appreciated, and I hope to see you there. Thank you again to Bruce, who called last week to correct me on the date of this event. It's what I love about our listeners. They are always on the ball. Hi, Sam.
How you doing, Georgia?
Good.
Happy hump day to you, too.
Yeah, you too, Sam. I know you're a hardworking American. You live at this station.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you ready for a great show today, Sam?
Absolutely.
Okay, what would you say is the most hated and feared agency in our country today?
Ooh, I know.
What?
I know. It's the IRS.
Bingo, Sam.
What do I win?
Nothing. You win the opportunity to sit in on a fascinating show.
Okay.
And isn't our timing just wonderful that all of this breaking news with the IRS this week, and we have an ex-IRS agent who's going to come here and talk to us.
What a coincidence.
Great timing, I would say. The gods are watching out for us.
You bet.
Now, one of the most interesting evenings that I have ever spent at Freedom Forum was about a month ago when ex-IRS agent Joe Bannister was the speaker. I was so blown away by the evening that I invited Joe to be here today as our guest. So for those who missed that, who are not aware of Joe's story, you will have an opportunity today to hear it, and we're going to invite you to call in with comments and questions after you hear Joe's story today. So here's your chance. Now, he challenged the IRS, the very hand that was feeding him. Whistleblowers have become part of our country today. We're all being called to be whistleblowers, as more people today in the history of our country do not trust their government. Do you trust your government, Sam?
Not as far as I can throw.
That's right. So the question is, what has happened to us? Is the problem that our politicians no longer keep their oath to protect and defend our Constitution? From the moment they take their hands off the Bible, do they forget what they are swearing to do?
On purpose.
Yeah, I think so. That or they get a case of amnesia very quickly.
Oh, man.
But we need to restore our Constitution, not ignore it. Now, Benjamin Franklin said, when you give up your freedom for security, you will end up with neither.
Absolutely true.
Wise, wise words.
That was a wise man.
Yes. And freedom is something we have to fight for. It is not automatic. And many of us today believe that we are in a race with tyranny. And the question is, who will make it first to the finish line? That is our challenge. And at this time. Now, in honor of the two biggest breaking stories of the week, the IRS and the press, which are no laughing matter, I'm going to bring you a little bit of humor here to lighten the mood before we get to the serious talk today. You ready, Sam?
You bet.
Okay, the post office just recalled their latest stamp design. They feature pictures of IRS agents on them, and people couldn't figure out which side to spit on.
Oh,
isn't that good? And the new slogan...
That could be a lawyer joke as well.
It could be. Absolutely. The new slogan of the IRS is, we've got what it takes to take what you've got.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a truism,
too.
Don't
they?
Mm-hmm. Now, as for the news, the Wall Street Journal is read by the people who run the country. The New York Times is read by people who think they run the country. The Washington Post is read by people who think they should run the country. And the San Francisco Chronicle is read by people who aren't sure there is a country or that anyone is running it. But whoever it is, they oppose all that they stand for. Now, there are occasional exceptions if the leaders are handicapped minorities, feminist atheist dwarfs, who happen to also be illegal aliens from any country or galaxy, as long as they are Democrats. You know, that voting in 212 in Santa Cruz County and also across California was so outrageous. The numbers were so high. It's like in the 75 percentile. So you really have to question, what in the world are people thinking about when they vote today, especially in this golden state that is slowly turning another little tarnished color? Now, before we get to our guest today, let me fill you in on some information that will help you understand what Joe is going to be talking about. There's an amazing documentary by Aaron Russo, who is a very well-known Hollywood filmmaker. He did The Rose for Bette Midler, Trading Places, and many other very successful films. Aaron, a very courageous man, decided to take on the question about whether or not there was a law requiring Americans to pay a federal income tax. Or was the tax fraud being perpetrated by the American government? Now, the name of this documentary is Freedom to Fascism. You can get a copy from Freedom Forum, and I would highly recommend it. So let me highlight just a few points from Mr. Russo's film. In 1913, America was a free country. Then a band of very powerful bankers achieved their father's and great-grandfather's goal. And America has never been the same, and soon the world will not be the same. Under President Woodrow Wilson, these powerful bankers convinced Secretary of State Knox to lie to the American people about the ratification of the 16th Amendment. And if you examine the 16th Amendment carefully, you will find that a sufficient number of states never ratified that amendment. The American people were led to believe there was a tax on their labor. Now, that same year, the bankers committed their second and by far most diabolical fraud ever perpetrated on the American people by bribing senators to pass the Federal Reserve Act without the required constitutional amendment. And that, folks, is how the Federal Reserve was born 100 years ago. Now, one of those bankers, Mr. Rothschild, said, "Give me control of a nation's money supply, and I care not who makes its laws." The bankers won, and the people lost. Now the Federal Reserve could issue dollars legally, and the government gave these bankers its most important powers, and now they had to borrow money from them to pay interest to finance the government. The American people were forced to lower their standard of living and pay graduated income tax to the government, so the government could give these bankers more profits. Now, President Woodrow Wilson, when he signed the federal law into effect, said later in regret, quote, "I am a most unhappy man. I have unwittingly ruined my country. A great industrial nation is now controlled by its system of credit." This was the beginning, people, of the one world order takeover. And if you don't see this, wipe the sleep out of your eyes. It is here, America. It is happening right here, right now. So, needless to say, I am delighted today to have as my guest Joe Bannister, the first whistleblower who stood up to the IRS corruption, challenging the IRS while serving as a special agent. Joe is a graduate of San Jose State University. He earned his Certified Public Accountant Certificate from the state of California in 1991, and he was a CPA for 15 years. I'm also going to ask Joe to share with us that day in 1996 as he was driving around listening to his favorite radio station in San Jose when he heard Jeff Metcalf interviewing a woman whose name was D.V. Kidd and how that radio show set Joe on a course that would change his life. Oh, the power of radio. So let's welcome Joe to our show. Welcome, Joe, to KSCO.
Hey, Georgia, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, Joe, because I consider you to be a true modern-day hero.
you're making me blush. I guess you can't see it, but I'm just trying to do the right thing, and I guess it makes it seem so special just because no one else is speaking up.
I know.
That's the sad thing.
And, Joe, isn't this amazing timing to have you on today with everything that's happening with the IRS in the news this week? Isn't this just the luck of the draw for us so we can talk about that as well as hear your story?
Yeah, it's always a timely issue, isn't it, how evil and corrupt the IRS is. But it's things like this that gives us a little window, you know, that we can yell through to the rest of the public who seems to keep their head in the sand about these things.
Yeah, and who would know better than you, Joe, because you were one of them for a while.
I'm unfortunately very confounded at how little people pay attention to how they're being robbed and intimidated by this agency.
My first question to you, Joe, is how did a good Catholic boy like you end up being an IRS agent, a person we all fear and loathe? Why don't you tell us about your family background and how this occurred?
Thank you. Well, I grew up in, born and raised in San Jose. Just over the hill from Santa Cruz. And as you say, I was born and raised and still Catholic. And it's really a kind of an interesting story. Basically, I went to Catholic grade school and high school, Bellarmine College Preparatory, for those that are familiar with the San Jose area. It was the oldest Catholic men's high school west of the Mississippi, founded in the 1850s.
Lots of kids that went to that school, yeah.
Went to San Jose City College and San Jose State. And I guess maybe the people might identify with a Catholic boy saying I was a little bit too naive about the world and how much corruption was out there. So basically, after I graduated from college with a degree in accounting, I went out into the private sector. What they call public accounting to begin with. There's quite a large firm called KPMG.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the few international accounting firms because they all keep merging with each other. I worked there for about 3 years and then a couple years as a controller in a venture capital firm up in the Menlo Park area. And basically at that point, again, with the naivete sticking with me, I got an accounting degree and this accounting work after graduating and realized, like, wow, what am I doing here? Can I really stand to do this kind of work, you know, for the next 30 or 40 years of a career without just going crazy?
You needed more excitement, Joe?
I was looking for more excitement. You know those Catholic boys are looking for more excitement whenever they can. So what happened was I had a lot of friends and actually relatives also who were in law enforcement. Cousin was Sacramento PD, brother who's, I think you've even heard in my speech the other night, just made the lieutenant's list, the California Highway Patrol, young baby brother in the San Jose Police Department, but neighbors who were sergeants in the SJPD and federal agents and all kinds of things. And so I had this brainstorm, well, gee, I could take all of these financial skills and training and become an investigator so I could have the best of both worlds. I could draw upon my experience and training as an accountant, as a financial person, mm-hmm. and yet do something that would definitely be more exciting, be a criminal investigator.
Wow. Now, what about your dad, Joe? Was he also in enforcement?
No, but he did. He worked for the city of San Jose in their public works department, the design and construction division. And so he was a public servant. He died actually the same year, 1993, when I went into the IRS. Mm. But, happy, joyful government servant, out there building aqueducts and roadways and overpasses for the city of San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
And then really all four of his sons and my mom's sons were in government service until I had to resign. I guess I'll be talking about later in the show.
Yes.
And that brings up a good point is that, the Bannister family, at least the Ron Bannister family, I was not anti-government in the least.
No, doesn't sound like it at all.
We were actually very happy to serve in local, state, or even federal service, and that's, still believe that to this day. But my parents also raised me to, tell the truth and do the right thing even when no one's looking and, not bear false witness, obey the commandments. Don't just tell people you're a Catholic. I mean, really adhere to
live it.
Mm-hmm. Jesus and the church, and which are not inconsistent. And that's kind of that's how I was raised. That's how I grew up. So meanwhile, I have this itch, this urge to seek some work in as a criminal investigator. And a family friend who down the road ended up becoming my boss actually at the IRS suggested that I look at both the FBI and the IRS Criminal Investigation Division as potential places to work.
Okay, Joe, yeah. I'm going to have you hold that thought where you're going to choose between those two groups. We're going to have to take a quick break. We will come right back, everybody, and we'll pick up the story, okay? Stay with me. Mm-hmm.
Hello, KSEO customers. This is Adam from the Ben Lomond Market Meat Department, inviting you to our one-day meat bonanza sale, Friday, May 17th. We'll be offering these items in the bulk quantities. 1-pound packages of cooked shrimp meat for $5.75 a pound. 5-pound packages of Miller hot dogs for $19.75 each. Pork tenderloins, $3.35 a pound. New York strips, $6.59 a pound. Boneless pork loins for $1.98 a pound. Baby back ribs for $2.98 a pound. Bone-in pork butts for $1.45 a pound. Victor brand bacon in the 5-pound package for $3.95 a pound. 3-pound bags of tilapia fillets for $3.30 a pound. Pork spare ribs for $1.98 a pound. Filet mignon, $11.95 a pound. And ribeye roast for $6.89 a pound. Buy in bulk packages and get great savings. It's a perfect way to stock up the freezer or have a barbecue with family and friends. And remember, this is a one-day sale only. Friday, May 17th. Hope to see you at the Ben Lomond Market.
If you own property, you know how much hard work goes into keeping up with it. Kubota Compact Tractors can help you power through all kinds of spring chores.
If you're thinking, I'd love to own a Kubota, but can I afford a Kubota?
Think CNN Tractors in Watsonville. At CNN, Kubota quality pays for a lot less than you might think. For example, the feature-loaded L3200F starts at only $12,995 with a 31.9-horsepower Kubota diesel engine. Nothing wimpy under the hood. The L3200F also features a Category 1 three-point hitch, smooth shuttle transmission, and power steering. All standard and all with the durability and reliability that a Kubota is known for. Kubota's L3200F. Think about it. With so much power, versatility, and quality, you can't afford not to take a look. Check out Kubota at CNN Tractors in Watsonville. Give us your tough jobs.
For real answers to the big questions of life, consider turning to the power of God at a free talk entitled Responding to God's Sustaining Love with international speaker Brian Talcott, a practitioner and teacher of Christian Science Healing. Talcott will present this one-hour free talk Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Rose Garden Branch Library at 1580 Nagley in San Jose. Find real answers to the big questions in the power of God's divine love. Sunday at 2 p.m. For information, call the San Jose Christian Science Church.
You, there's only one, and we exist because of you. To provide the care you need when you need it, Physicians Medical Group has over 300 providers just in Santa Cruz County. That's over 300 teammates focused on the one, the only, you. With over 42 specialties and 100 locations, you'll find the right provider for you. Find your teammate, your Physicians Medical Group care provider, by visiting our website, pmgscc.com.
Hi, it's MZ. We at KSCO-KOMY believe that prescription drugs cause much more harm than good and should be used as a last resort rather than a first resort to treat health conditions. We are strong supporters of the 90 for Life program from Youngevity, the belief that if you give your body all the 90 essential nutrients that it needs, you will live a much longer and healthier life and not need toxic prescription drugs that lead to side effects that require more toxic prescription drugs and on and on. Promoting 90 for Life has enabled us to not only survive but thrive in the cutthroat media industry controlled by mega corporations, big government, and big pharma. We believe 90 for Life is the key to health care in the USA. Obamacare is a more expensive continuation of a failed system. With your help, we can save America by getting it healthy again. Please go online to KSEOteam.com, get on the 90 for Life program, order a healthy start pack, and get and stay healthy. KSEO Team.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. We are speaking today with Joe Bannister, an ex-IRS agent, and we are hearing Joe's story. So, Joe, we left off that you are looking at two possibilities for career choices, the FBI and the IRS. You want to pick it up from there?
Sure, Georgia. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was kind of an interesting choice. It seemed like a no-brainer to me, even though my friend was at that point a managerial special agent in the IRS. When it was a choice between the FBI and the IRS, and you have to remember we're talking about the early 90s, you know, the FBI, hands down, was the choice. I mean, at least at that time, you know, prior to Waco and all these kinds of shenanigans, the FBI had the, you know, aura of really cool work. You know, you had the old FBI show with Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. And, you know, it's pretty exciting.
Yes,
to think that
romanticized.
Yes, very romanticized. So the FBI was my first choice, and I applied to both agencies, however. And so it turned out that the FBI application went very rapidly. Within just 2 or 3 weeks after I sent in the application, I was called in for a battery of testing, both physical testing, or physical, mental, written, oral, all kinds of testing, and you know, even the psychological testing, which, believe it or not, I passed. The FBI thought I was psychologically sound, at least back in the early 90s. And so that was going along very well, and I was quite excited about it. Then all of a sudden, and again, we're talking about the early 90s, when Newt Gingrich was there as the Speaker of the House, and they had a hiring freeze. So the FBI, even though I was ready to be sent to Quantico, Virginia to begin training, couldn't get the actual authority to send me on a plane and put me there because there was a hiring freeze due to this budget crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So I was waiting month after month after month. My family, who'd gone through a lot of turmoil, was saying, hey, Joe, you know, is this going to happen, or are you going to just move on? So meanwhile, the IRS, as I say, I applied to both the FBI and the IRS, and the FBI was on hold, and the IRS called me. The San Francisco IRS Criminal Investigation Division office called me and asked me if I'd be interested in a position as a special agent with the IRS. And as I said, I was so enthralled with the thought of being an FBI agent that I thought, oh, IRS? I mean, they don't have any cool shows about them. And if I tell people I'm an IRS agent at parties, they'll all run.
That's right.
If they invite me at all. So, you know, but I'm thinking about things. And I started to think, well, what about the actual work? And, you know, really, an IRS criminal investigator, they're going to be examining financial documents and, you know, things that are my cup of tea, yet they'll also be doing the, you know, so-called running and gunning. You know, they carry a firearm, they get all kinds of training, they get their cool government cars, and maybe I should give it a shot. I mean, mm-hmm. The FBI can't hire me. IRS is offering me a job. Why not go for it? So I did, and it was, let's see, August of 93 when I was offered the job, and by November of 93, I was actually sworn in. I was a ceremony unlike most IRS ceremonies where they'll just swear in, you know, 10, 20, 30 people. Okay, raise your hand, and it's just kind of a perfunctory ceremony. But mine was just myself with my family and over there in Oakland with the twin, you know, federal towers, really a meaningful ceremony, and with the flag there, and took an oath to support and defend the Constitution.
Hand on the Bible, right?
Yeah, just mm-hmm. the whole thing. And so mm-hmm. it was very meaningful. It was a real... real event for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, on that day, prior to that day of taking the oath and subsequent to taking the oath, I was always very mindful of the oath because, of course, I guess there's an alternative version, but, you know, I took the oath with God named in the oath, and I'm not going to break a vow or an oath that I've made to God as witness. So,
because of your background, your good upbringing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. But
yeah.
Then, you know, I was also a certified public accountant at that time, so there were ethical considerations relating to be a CPA and, you know, the moral considerations of my upbringing and the oath. So, I mean, there was a multifaceted reasons to be an honorable, you know, government worker.
Mm-hmm.
So,
so you became an agent.
Yes.
You started working.
And I was sent to training. This was in November 93 is when I started. And then throughout the beginning of 1994, I was sent to Glencoe, Georgia, where they have a federal law enforcement training center. And they train everybody but the FBI and the DEA, basically.
Mm-hmm.
The Border Patrol, the IRS, the Secret Service, the, you know, NCIS, everybody goes to Glencoe, Georgia. And so I was there January, February, March, April, and then about mid-year was returned to the San Francisco office where I got hired, and then, believe it or not, was transferred to San Jose, which was my hometown.
Wow.
So, you know, usually federal agents in many agencies are moved all over the country
mm-hmm.
and the world. So for me to be a Fed in my own hometown doing surveillances when I already knew all the streets and
great.
My nickname in the IRS was actually Spider-Man because of all I enjoyed surveillances immensely.
You look like Spider-Man, by the way. You're in great shape too.
So it was anyway. So, you know, in 1994 there, I was just having the time of my life, and you know, I wasn't on any kind of a power trip or like, oh wow, now I can start shaking, you know, ordinary citizens down for their meal receipts.
Mm-hmm. You weren't on a power trip.
Right. These were very high-level investigations, and it's a 20-year law enforcement career with an IRS special agent. So I intended to spend the next 20 years being a criminal investigator for the IRS. In fact, if I had stayed, I'd be retiring right about
now. My gosh. Okay, now you're out and about in San Jose. You're in your car. You turn on your radio. You're listening to Jeff Metcalf, who was a favorite guy on your radio station. And you hear this interview with a woman, D.V. Kidd. Why don't you tell our listeners what you heard and what happened as a result of that?
Absolutely. Well, that was a KSFO up in San Francisco. I probably would have been listening to KSCO if I could get it on my radio.
And now you can.
Yeah, I think we can.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this was before internet or any of that.
Mm-hmm.
But, so it was December of 1996. I had been with the IRS for about 3 years. And I'm listening to this radio show, and Jeff Metcalf, for any who had ever listened to him, very honorable guy. He wasn't about, oh, the Democrats are always wrong and the Republicans are always right. He was about, you know, what is right or wrong
mm-hmm.
versus who is right or wrong. And I liked that about him. He was also very constitutionally minded,
mm-hmm.
and so despite me being an IRS agent, I was very constitutionally minded, especially about things like the Second Amendment, you know, realizing the reasons that we have the amendments in the Bill of Rights,
mm-hmm.
Knowing the history behind it. So I loved listening to Jeff. Well, okay. One day in December 1996, he has D.V. Kidd on his show, and she's saying things that are really giving me they're making the hair on the back of my neck rise up, because she's saying that the IRS is enforcing the income tax illegally. She was talking about the Federal Reserve, the monetary system, the New World Order, all these kinds of topics that prior to that day, I was always, it was inculcated in me that, oh, that's conspiracy talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't, those are wackos that talk like that.
Right.
So it made me wonder, well, wait a second. Here I am, this, gunslinging federal investigator. How could Jeff Metcalf have fooled me that he's not this upstanding guy, but he actually is, pals around with these tax protesters
mm-hmm.
and coup?
Mm-hmm.
Or D.V. Kidd could be telling the truth, but that can't be, because my entire professional life revolves around the income tax. How could I not know or have noticed this before? And so it was that dichotomy, that difference that made my little synapses in my brain kind of go crazy and wonder, okay, who's telling me the truth? What is the truth?
Hmm.
And that's what started me on this journey that took about 2 years of off-duty, part-time research and investigation while still going to work every day as an IRS special agent to get to the bottom of these issues that D.V. Kidd brought up about the income tax and the monetary system.
And how far did you go with this, Joe? And did you keep a record as you went along this little ride of investigation?
Yes, I absolutely did, because, of course, my training and experience was all about documentation.
Mm-hmm.
An accountant certainly keeps oodles of documentation. A criminal investigator has to, because when you bring a case to prosecution, the prosecutor is going to sit you down and say, okay, what do you got?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I was very much trained in having that kind of activity going on. And the bottom line was that I had to document everything that I found, and over that two-year period, I did exactly that. I documented. I went to the law library. I went to the regular, regular library. I did all kinds of research on the internet, and I didn't trust what anyone just told me.
Mm-hmm.
I went and verified it.
Mm-hmm.
I even had the opportunity, because I was still working at the IRS, to go into the IRS library. And there wasn't really anything super secret in there, per se, but it was more reference materials that they're difficult to get your hands on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really helpful, to actually go to the IRS library to look at all the law books that they had in their possession to verify, some of these claims about the enforcement and administration of the income tax. After this two-year period, I couldn't help but at least preliminarily conclude that what D.V. Kidd said on the radio that day was true. And it was really a gut-wrenching time
for me
because, again, I expected to be there for my whole career. I was getting to a point where the compensation was pretty darn good. I mean, back in the mid to late 90s, making upwards of $80,000 to $90,000 a year, with the skyrocketing even more to 120,000 to 140,000 a year, plus a nice pension.
It was a lot of money.
Again, seeing, well, wait a second, if the proof, at least to this point, shows that the agency is lying to the public, that people's rights are being violated, what about my oath? What about my upbringing? What about the ethics of the CPA profession? What about the memorandums that came from the IRS commissioner that said, if you encounter any fraud, waste, or abuse, to report it, speak up.
So when you questioned them and the commissioners, what did you get from them?
Well, what I did is I tried to synthesize, and as you mentioned about documentation, I tried to summarize at least the highlights of some of what I found, not everything, but just some, and presented it to my supervisors there at the San Jose office on Market Street.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, you know, they when I approached them, they sat me down with me, but they looked at me like I had two heads and said, "Are you really serious about this?" And I said, "Well, of course I'm serious. I mean, this is a serious matter." You know, and these agents, these supervisors, took the same oath to support and defend the Constitution that I did. A lot of them were Catholics. You know, they were people that I thought should at least comprehend. They may not be comfortable for them, but they should nevertheless comprehend that this is a meaningful issue. It's something that needs to be resolved. But I basically got no assistance. They reduced their response down to a very short memorandum that said, "We will not be responding to your inquiries, and we will provide you with the paperwork necessary to tender your resignation."
Wow. Mm. So don't ask questions is really what they were saying. Go along to get along, or you're out.
Right. And they did, you know, they didn't fire me, but they did send me home for 7 days of administrative leave. And they said to me, you know, "Let us know at the end of that 7 days what your decision is."
Well, do you think, Joe, if at that point you had come back and said, "Okay, I'm just going to keep this information under wrap," would you still have stayed? Had you done that, would they have allowed you to stay?
Oh, they probably would have allowed me to stay, but, you know, no offense to Nome, Alaska, but that's probably where I would have been. you know, or just destroy my reputation, or just all kinds of nightmares.
Oh, my.
I really didn't think that would be too wise to stick around. Once I had let them know, "Look, I'm concerned about this. I hope you are too," and then find out that they're not, you know, "We're not talking about it. See you later." That I better just take my reputation, which was, you know, excellent up till that point, and leave with it intact, hoping that I'd be believed, you know, as if I were asked about what happened.
So basically you end up resigning from the IRS, correct?
Yes, February 25th, 1999.
Wow, that is really something, Joe. So now what you've learned is there is no law anywhere about this federal income tax. And even Aaron Russo went all the way to D.C. to the very top commissioner, right? He also could not find any law on the books anywhere about this. Is that correct?
Well, the way I'd like to explain it to people is that there are definitely Internal Revenue and income tax laws on the books. They're the real deal. They were passed by Congress and signed by the president anywhere between, you know, now and back to the 16th Amendment, which you heard in my speech was not properly ratified, but
right.
It was proclaimed to be ratified on February 25th, 1913. So during that time, there have been, you know, a myriad of tax laws that have been passed by Congress and signed by the president. The thing is, who do those income tax laws actually apply to, and who is required to perform certain activities, you know, do certain conduct in response to those laws? And that's the problem, is that the laws have been written to encompass a very small segment of financial transactions, shall we say. If an American does business with a foreigner and pays some kind of payment to a foreigner, there could very well be an income tax liability that will arise from that transaction. If a foreigner comes and works in America for a temporary period of time, there could very well be income tax implications relating to that conduct. So, you know, to say there's just no law, period, it's more that there are laws, but the IRS is lying about who those laws apply to and who's required to, you know, do something in response to those laws.
But the average Joe in this country is really not required to pay this. It is a voluntary thing. Is that not correct?
Well, that is correct. Basically, the average American who's living in America, working in America, who has no kinds of foreign, you know, activities that might be get them into that dragnet, they're simply earning a living. They're surviving. They are pursuing life, liberty, and, you know, the pursuit of happiness. That there is no liability statute in the entire Internal Revenue Code that makes them liable to pay a federal income tax. And the reason that being liable, L-I-A-B-L-E, you know, being liable for the tax is so important, is that that the way that the taxing authorities designate who's required by law to pay any particular tax? There are all kinds of federal taxes that aren't income taxes in which they make someone liable to pay the tax. I can give you a quick example, unless we have a break coming up.
Yeah, we actually do. Why don't you hang on to that thought, and we'll be right back, everybody. Hold on for a minute.
Employers, are you hiring? Workforce Santa Cruz County offers staffing solutions. Call to find out more at 831-332-3638. Services include recruiting for new employees, hiring incentives for the business, retaining and transitioning staff. Workforce Santa Cruz County services have no cost. Some actually pay your business. Promote and post your jobs. Assess and test your applicant skill levels at no cost. Workforce Santa Cruz County can offer up to $4,500 in hiring incentives to your business. Visit our website, workforcesc.com/business, or call 831-332-3638. That's 831-332-3638. Or email businessrep@workforcesc.com. Hiring the right staff and training them right is key for expanding and sustaining your business.
My name is Mickey Phelps here from Crown Cafe and Scotts Valley Market. I just wanted to let you know that Scotts Valley Market has some amazing prices on meat and produce, and of course throughout the store. Jared and his crew from the meat department will be more than happy to cut a nice filet mignon to your liking. Also, Scotts Valley Market has an amazing hot food bar, and also we make some of the best sandwiches in town, like the Irish. So folks, come on in and you'll find out that Scotts Valley Market has some amazing everyday deals. Also, at Scotts Valley Market, be sure to look for those yellow tags. That's where you're going to save a lot of money. And we'll be sure that we are very competitive with other grocery stores out there. What makes us different is that we are local and family owned. So come on in. And while you're there, be sure to ask for Mickey. And don't forget that if you need any catering, give Crown Cafe a call at 831-566-1425. 831-566-1425.
Ford is generating more positive buzz than any other manufacturer in the world for the second year in a row. And you can always find the best deal on the Ford of your choice at North Bay Ford in Santa Cruz. Hello, I'm Jeff Winterhalter. North Bay Ford is a locally owned dealership with low overhead, friendly, small town values, and the best deals on new Ford cars, trucks, and RVs. Get this, Jeff's deal at North Bay Ford.
Forget depreciation. Save thousands with a late model certified pre-owned car or truck from North Bay Ford. Ford certified pre-owned vehicles come standard with a 12-month, 12,000-mile comprehensive warranty, 7-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty, plus 24-hour roadside assistance. Let someone else pay the depreciation and save thousands with a just-like-new North Bay Ford certified pre-owned car or truck.
When you need an economical focus for your college student, a new Explorer for Sunday drives, or a fleet of powerful F-350s for your construction company, look first to your friends and neighbors at locally owned North Bay Ford. 1999 Soquel Avenue, Santa Cruz, or on the web at North Bay Ford.
So, Joe, continue explaining to us the taxes that people could be liable for, depending on whether they're doing business in another country or people from another country are doing business here.
Certainly. Well, I'll to continue with those examples, which I think will illustrate what I'm trying to say. You know, I'm sure if you've had friends and you come over to people's houses, might have a glass of wine or a drink, a cognac, and you know, you probably never heard anyone say, you know, I had to that cognac is really very special to me because I had to pay an excise tax and file a tax return with the ATF. An excise tax return for this liquor in my liquor cabinet. Of course, you never heard that because it never happens. And the reason it doesn't happen is because there is a tax on that cognac, but it's the manufacturer of the cognac, the what they call the distiller,
pays it,
who is liable to pay the tax, and it says so explicitly in the law. Same thing with, say, gasoline taxes. Now, we all pay it as a gasoline tax as federal and state gasoline tax as part of when we fill up our tank. But you or I or anyone else has never heard of someone saying, oh, you know, I filled up my tank with gas and then I had to fill out this form.
Right.
And send it into the government. Why? Because it's the manufacturer of that petroleum that's liable to pay the tax. So that's a couple of examples of why liability for a tax is important, because it designates who's the person that's on the hook to pay the tax. Well, with the income tax, you find that the entire section of the Internal Revenue Code that deals with the income tax, which is called Subtitle A, there is only one liability statute. There's only one place where liability for the income tax is spoken of, is mentioned, and that is where if you're a withholding agent and you make a payment to a non-resident alien or a foreign corporation. So the example I like to give is, you know, many people know about Andrea Bocelli. He's a, you know, famous singer.
Yes,
and he's from Italy. And let's say that he comes to, you know, Santa Cruz to do a concert. And the management at KSCO is going to pay him for coming. And if they're going to pay him, he say, well, I'm going to need $500,000 for the concert. And KSCO could very well, as the promoter, as the as the company that's actually paying Andrea, they would actually have to withhold a certain percentage from what they pay him, because they could very well be liable for an income tax on the money that they paid to Andrea Bocelli.
But that's because he's coming from Italy.
Right. He's a foreigner, and he's here temporarily. So that's to illustrate that there are provisions where an income tax has to be paid and where people have to file forms, and, you know, so that definitely exists. The thing is, again, comparing a situation with a company and Andrea Bocelli, a foreigner, to Georgia, Joe Bannister, anyone simply working for a living. They've never even left the country. They don't work with anybody who's foreign. They're just minding their own business, being an American, pursuing life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Well, and that's what I want to stick to. I want to stick to we the people, we the American middle class people who've been, you know, burdened with this tax all of our lives. The fact that one IRS agent, a Sherry Jackson, ran an ad saying that there was a $50,000 reward to anyone who could show a law requiring us to pay federal income tax, and to this date, no law has been found and no reward has been paid. What I don't understand, Joe, is why wouldn't this hold up in court? If someone were to challenge this as a taxpayer, why do we end up in prison?
Well, I think as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, Georgia, relating to this the current event that many people that is on many people's minds about what the IRS is doing. To, if you have a Tea Party in the name of your organization, or you want to promote educating people about the Constitution, there is a very large soft underbelly to the corruption in the IRS. And it's really about control more than raising revenue. And what the IRS will do is they're like a Gestapo or a Stasi, where they're not just, you know, accepting people's tax forms and calculating, you know, tax and things like that. They have whole cadres of employees who do nothing else but ferret out and attack people, individual people and groups who try to point out all their misdeeds, all mm-hmm. their dirty deeds.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're seeing, whether it be Sherry Jackson or myself or anyone that's, you know, well-known or even not well-known, there's a this well-oiled machine that is poised to grind you up. And I think that's another thing that most of the public doesn't realize, because they, the IRS, the federal government, are trying to protect the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that they can really do that is to keep the wool pulled over the public's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way they can do that is that when people who do wake up and do speak up, get out there and, you know, reach out and touch the public, then the IRS and the Department of Justice are right there to neutralize them with court orders to stop speaking about the topic, or prosecutions, or destroying them economically, whatever they can do to keep the message from getting out to the rest of the public.
It's called intimidation.
Right, because the bottom line is, if a whole bunch of Americans said we've had enough, the system would stop tomorrow.
See, we need to do it as a collective, don't we, Joe? Because if we did, then something would change.
Right, and it's that critical mass that the IRS is keeping the finger on the pulse and making sure that it never hits critical mass by going out and targeting, you know, people who are speaking up about it.
Mm-hmm.
So what we need is, you know, even if people have to do it kind of under the radar and spread the word and not be so public about it, but just do it, you know, without just being a blip on the radar, then you can get the word out a lot more without the IRS setting their sights on you like a, you know, a duck in a shooting gallery.
Mm-hmm. Rosie just handed me a piece of news from CBS. It appears that a congressional source tells CBS News that two people in the Cincinnati office of the IRS have been disciplined in connection with the targeting of conservative organizations. What does that mean, discipline? They ought to be in jail, in my opinion. What does discipline mean? Smacked on the hands?
Well, in my experience, it generally could mean a promotion or
like
a transfer. I have never seen an IRS agent get what they deserved if, you know, they were breaking the law in that manner. I'm not saying it doesn't happen,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, another reason why these hearings that are coming up, I hate to be cynical about them, but they really are just dog and pony shows.
Oh.
There were hearings back in 1997 when I worked at the IRS, and the agents had to testify behind screens and with garbled voices. They were so fearful about retribution.
My goodness.
And there were some laws that were passed that made some little bit of difference for a few years. But now here, 15 years later, those laws are virtually gutted by the IRS without any protection. So
wow.
The discipline that these agents got, they probably... What's happening is the IRS is trying to make it look like, oh, it's these two bad actors
right.
in Cincinnati, and they're the fall guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole cabal of others who are participating will get promoted and bonuses for keeping their mouths shut.
My gosh. So they're going to get a little slap on the hands. They're not going to prison is what you're basically saying. I love the word discipline. I just can't imagine if this were George Bush and this was going on, what would be going on the airwaves right now. But, Joe, we're going to have to take our top-of-the-hour break. You're going to stay with me. I'm going to open up the phone lines in the second hour, if that's okay with you, and let's see what the people have to say about what they've been hearing. So our number here is 831-479-1080. You are listening to KSCO 1080 AM. We'll be back right after the CBS News.
Mm-hmm.